Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 121. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
Present and accounted for.
Mr. Graham Thickens.
God save the queen, and the prince and the princess, too. What a wedding.
And Phil, I was up at 4 to see the wedding, Wilson.
That's true. I was there.
All right.
Oh. Wearing my jaunty hat.
Can you imagine? I had zero interest. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. You
gotta, it was gotta, great.
You gotta like it. It's fun.
Yeah, I hope Kate and William don't, you know, aren't upset that I didn't watch.
Well, you know, they're ready.
Well, we've got about five hours worth of coverage on TiVo. So
yep.
Yeah,
and
good.
And there were 8,000 tweets a minute. I read.
And feel free, Steve, to go ahead. They're registered at Home Depot. So if you want to pick them something
up. Yeah. Well, you know what they did do that I thought was kind of interesting is they put a cell phone jammer in Westminster Abbey so that there couldn't be any tweets or phone calls or anything. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I wish I could have been down at Brit's Pub this morning because the Aussies and Kiwis, there's a club. They were gathered at 5 a.m. even before you could drink. They don't allow drinking till 8 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Really? They don't allow drinking till 8? Oh, no, man.
That's apparently a Minnesota law, but they were down there drinking Crispin cider, I guess. But it was quite a party.
Wow. When did you leave Australia? How old were you?
Six.
Half. That's why you have no accent, right?
Yeah. I lost it in about 3 weeks, I think.
Okay. You know? All right.
And I couldn't talk Australian now if you put a gun to my head, you know. Other than good day, that's about all I know.
Yeah. Well, and I bet you watched, what was his name? Not Hulk Hogan.
Crocodile
Dundee.
Yeah, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
What was his name again?
I love everything.
Paul Hogan.
Paul Hogan.
Yeah. Hulk's younger brother.
Yeah, Hulk's younger brother. Hey, Phil and Graham, did you guys do that Hack and Hackers last Friday night? And what exactly was it and how was it?
Well, it was a bunch of journalists and hackers hanging out, drinking beer and wine and listening to a really good speaker, a guy
rather,
named Matt.
Rather bad beer, as I recall. What was that beer we were drinking? I don't even remember. Just like from Milwaukee's Best or something like that.
No, I thought they had some Honey Vice or something. Anyway.
No, that wasn't Honey Vice.
I thought they had some pretty good stuff. I don't know. But anyway, how many were there, Phil? But it must have been 100.
A little over 100, plus. Yeah.
100
plus.
And Matt Thompson, former Star Tribune web editor kind of a guy. Didn't he do the vitamin site, I think, when he was here?
No.
And now he's gone on to National Public Radio in Washington. And he gave a really good talk. Didn't you think so, Phil?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good event. It was the concept of working for, you know, finding ways to get the news to people and different elements and using the developer community to help, you know, really get the news that needs to get out there to people. We talked about some aggregation tools, talked about some very interesting opportunities that are out there. You know, my walk away was, but don't we really need to figure out ways to get people to be more curious about the news and more involved in what would really be more important? I mean, we talked, you know, you and I, the four of us just talked about the royal wedding, you know, in the great scheme of things, is that really that big a deal? And is that as big a news as we're making it? So
yeah,
I guess you can give all the tools you want, but you know, it's one of those things that you have to figure out. You have to have interest. You have to have interest in the news.
Well, when there were fewer news outlets, and everybody was paying attention to fewer places, you know, few networks and a few newspapers and so forth, there seemed to almost be a collective agreement by editors on what was important. You know, what were breaking stories and what were the things that people should pay attention to. And I think that's really at the end of the day, when I had the Today Show on this morning for my wife, who is highly interested in the wedding.
Old baloney. Now, come on, Steve, you wanted to watch just as much as she did now, so stop it.
All I cared about was Kate's dress. You're right. But in all seriousness, it was, fascinating to really see that all these people around the world and all these people in Britain are all goosey about it. And then at the same time, they're having the same level of economic severe cuts to budgets and so forth in the UK. And it was almost like, let's do this. Let's really pull out all the stops and take people's mind off it. And those are the sorts of things that, news organizations used to do, is they'd report the news and then they'd have commentary and so on and so forth. And a lot of people were paying attention, but it doesn't seem like any of that's really happening anymore. It's almost like you have to seek out things that you're interested in.
Well, you know,
it's not happening in the, go ahead.
Tim, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's not happening as concentrated as it used to. I mean, there's still as much or probably more analysis going on. It's just, it's spread out amongst so many different channels over a 24-hour day, as opposed to listening to Walter Cronkite for 30 minutes a day.
Right.
Yeah, but
right.
There's so many commentators now. There are so many people doing analysis that it's you know, just how much analysis can it be? And if you've got to populate news channels and you've got to populate all these news outlets with people that can do analysis, you start scraping the bottom of the barrel of people who can do analysis. You know, and it starts to get really stupid. it's very difficult. I still hearken back to what we need to do is figure out a way to effectively compensate people that are feeding us news, simply because, you know, if you get what you pay for. If you have a bunch of people out there, quote unquote, you know, giving us the news, and they're never compensated for it. I mean, it's just like, you know, how much trust can you put in somebody who's not making a living doing what they're doing? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I saw
that makes sense. I'm sorry, that didn't make a lot of sense. I apologize for that. Must be the cough syrup.
Yeah, journalism. I saw a survey where it's ranked like the least desirable job of all out there now. You know, like surveying college graduates or something, because it's just, you know, you can't make money at it. You know, that's the reality. But, you know, one thing that I got out of Matt's talk is he mentioned this site Storify. Do you remember that film?
Yeah. And it went public, actually. Private beta. Yeah.
Yeah. It was he was talking about it because NPR has been testing it, I guess, but it's really an interesting site, Storify.com. It's a way to tell stories using social media, tweets, photos, videos, and so forth. You search multiple social networks from one place and then drag individual elements into your story. So I haven't played with it yet, but I think I'm gonna do that. It looks like a new way to do journalism, a new tool for helping people create stories.
Well, you know, in some ways, when I saw Storify, because I saw an article about it, actually, and then went and read the article and then sort of poked around, they had sort of a preview site. And you know what I thought about is I thought about The Wire at WCCO.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly what I thought of. And I thought, you know, again, The Wire was maybe too complicated for, you know, Joe Sixpack and even us. You know, we're maybe...
Joe
12-pack. There you go. But it was the right concept, because it was not only them doing the core, but then bringing in all this stuff from everything around the story. And you know what? What's interesting about that is when I look at Tech Meme, and I've told people this many, many times, when I look at Tech Meme, you know, there's an article that's kind of a conversation starter, and then all the people that blog about it and link to that story then are part of the quote-unquote conversation, and now they began to add Twitter comments to Tech Meme and so forth. I've said to many, many people over time is that I can go in, if there's a big hot story, I can go in and look at the main conversation starter story, and then I can look at 3, 4, 5, you know, like All Things D and Slash Dot, and, you know, look at what people are saying about it, and then maybe the next day Computer World or CNET or some other publication has a write-up on it trying to recap it, but by then I've already exhausted it. I've had a 360 degree view of that topic, and I think that's the power of a Storify, is that same sort of thing, right? You get all this multiple perspective that's focused on this one topic, and it's kind of an interesting premise. Anyway, little tangent there, but
it's all right. Tangents are good. Tangents are good.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, and yeah, Hacks and Hackers event was good, and there's more to come. And it was the first Twin Cities such event, but it's been going on globally and in several other cities, for the last, I don't know, 6 months or a year anyway. Yep. I forget who started it. Well, is it one of the guys behind Storify that started, or what was I reading? I forget where those guys are located that started this thing, but it appears to be growing and drawing crowds wherever they do it.
Yep. Hey, you guys gonna go out and get a white iPhone?
It's too thick.
Yeah. Did you see that? Yeah, there's like a millimeter thicker on the white iPhone. Like, who cares?
It was more than that. It was at least 2 millimeters.
Why would it be thicker? Why would it be thicker?
Because they have to shield it more or something. I mean, I'm so sick of stories about this whole thing with a white iPhone, I could scream. It's like, I sure don't want one. I don't know who does, but do you guys know, were there lines yesterday for people wanting to get them?
I don't think so. I mean, there was zero reporting on that. But, you know, down in Winona, Minnesota, there's that firm Colorware who has for many, many years. You could ship your computer down there, and they would take it apart and they would paint it in different high gloss, gorgeous colors. I mean, they had this palette of like, 200 colors, and now it's an unlimited palette because you can pull Pantone colors and they'll paint it, in that color. I saw somebody that had a red iPhone. And I didn't have a chance to catch up with the guy, but he's talking on this thing and it looked pretty cool. So he must have done the Colorware, because they'll do it with iPhones and iPod touches and Android phones and all that. So you can have kind of a unique phone. But
interesting. What was the name? Where was that?
Yeah, the firm is called Colorware. I'll put it in the show notes. They're down in Winona.
Winona,
Minnesota. And they've been doing this for many, many years. And I got to tell you that it is absolutely very high quality painting. They're a top end shop.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but I'll put it in the show notes so you guys have a link. Everybody has a link. So Tim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And
yes.
So I really wanted to go last night, but I had two things that had to happen. And also I helped a buddy with his wireless network. But did you went to the MSP WordPress group, right?
I did. There's about, 25 or so people that were there. Some of the same people that are normally in they attend, and then some new people. There was two sessions, and one that John Havlick did on optimizing WordPress for speed. Oh. And then another one Jason Fole did on Civi CRM. Now, unfortunately, I missed both of those presentations because I was in the Project 515 room, and we were actually working on the site and migrating it to its final host. We're going to actually, within the next 2 weeks, cut it live. They wanted to do the launch and PR around it on May the 15th. So 5:15.
Okay.
So that's why we're pretty much done with the site and have been done for a while. So,
yeah, I
worked on that the whole time. I would have liked to have seen John's presentation, especially.
No, that was on Civic CRM, or how do you?
No. He did the WordPress optimization. Now, one of the interesting things is it was in the new part of the nerdery. They've expanded to the north end of the building, and they have this huge presentation stage. That can hold over 200 people. Has a really nice screen. They've got Mac Pros hooked up to it with wireless keyboard and mice. Nice. So you can actually stand up front and do your presentation from a projected Mac there. And it's a great setup. And the community manager there, I forgot his name, but anyway, he was saying that they're going to have the capability to do both live streaming and recording of the session. So maybe the next time.
Oh, wow.
Next month, they'll be able to live stream it. So even if you're helping your buddy set up Wi-Fi or whatever, you can actually watch it or watch it later.
Yeah. Well, I hope they have chat so I can ask questions. I'm kidding.
They've expanded in that building. Huh? Do they have room for all their people there now in one location then? Because I know they're getting close to 200 employees.
Yeah, it looked like they had filled up the space pretty well. And you know, it didn't look like there were any empty desks there. So yeah, they've expanded quite a bit. They've got a nice setup.
Yeah. Right in Bloomington near, what is it, near 94th and 35W.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Still says Sierra Bravo on the outside, though.
Oh, it does. So they haven't totally ditched that name.
That may be the parent company's name, but other cards say the nerdery on it.
Yeah, yeah. They might have like a corporate name and then a marketing name.
Yeah. Well, we have an interesting opportunity this morning, and Graham, why don't you just briefly say a few words about the guy that we're going to have on,
sure.
John Roberts from New Council, and who he is and stuff.
Yeah, well, John is a longtime attorney involved in the tech industry. He's worked in public companies, large companies, and has worked with a lot of startups. And I think it was probably 8 or 10 years ago now, or coming up, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, when he and his partner, Harold Slowick, decided to set up shop as newcouncil.com to focus only on early stage startups. They might continue to do a little bit of work in the corporate sector, but they have a wealth of experience between the two of them. Harold worked in the Valley. He's also got some public company experience. They've been around IPOs. They've obviously worked with VCs extensively and angel investors. And I think it could be said, I don't think I'm letting any cat out of the bag, that they're angel investors in their own right. So John is a longtime Minnesotan and a graduate of Gustavus Adolphus. And where do you go to law school? Minnesota or? Yep. University of Minnesota Law School, 1982.
Great.
He's a good guy. I've known him
for a long time. He's a good guy.
And I met him way back, I think, when he was with Net Perceptions. He was their general counsel back in the late 90s. I think post IPO.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, it's good to be able to have him on.
Well, let's add him in.
Yeah.
We'll give him a call here and just take a moment. We're calling him on a telephone.
I'm sorry, what was that?
We're calling him on a telephone.
Hello, this is John Roberts.
John, Steve Borsch, and I'm on with my cronies, Graham Thickens and Tim Elliott, John. And Phil Wilson.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Phil. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
Did you watch the wedding, John?
I did. My daughter, I got a 13-year-old daughter, and you know, I think every kid in that subgeneration is probably more into the celebrity deal than we ever were.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wanted to get up. So we got up at 4:30.
Oh, oh my, you got up. Oh, whoa.
We had to be up at 4 since the blessed ceremony took place at 5, Minneapolis time. But it was, you know, again, for me, I was just, once in a while, you have to be part of these global events. And, 2 billion people watch this thing, they think?
Yeah, yeah.
How incredible that. So, like, getting up early to watch a World Cup game, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's good. It's good to have you on today, John. Thanks for agreeing to come on, and we thought we'd talk a little bit about the early stage climate here in Minnesota for early stage startups, and we touched on your background and Harold's a little bit before we connected you on here, but. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your business, newcouncil.com, and what you're doing these days?
Sure. Well, Harold, I've been working with Harold now for about 5 years at New Council, and we're almost entirely focused on representing technology-driven startups. At any one time, we're probably representing 50 to 60 startups. Wow. Primarily here in Minnesota, but I suppose we have about 10 outstate clients, probably 6-7 states, in this wonderful age where people make referrals to you. We've got a number of clients we've never even met face to face. So,
oh, wow.
And we do a little bit of outsourced sort of technology, e-commerce, legal consulting for some larger corporations as well. But it really is the day-to-day work for a fair number of startups.
And you're helping them with everything from, you know, forming their LLC or just the basic getting started kind of stuff on up through all kinds of contracts and partnership agreements and all that sort of thing, I suppose.
Sure. We really function as general counsel, if you will, for these companies. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing variety of issues that come up every single day. Of course, there's formation and corporate issues all the time, licensing, distribution, HR, of course, as companies grow and add people. Founders find out when they get 10, 15 people that they spend an inordinate amount of time either recruiting, staffing, or dealing with various issues related to HR. I think that's one thing that most people underestimate, the time necessary to build a good team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, if you're acting as general counsel, John, how much? And this is maybe not even possible to ask as kind of a general statement, but or general question. But how much time is spent on you advising startups on intellectual property issues, either how to protect their IP or how not to step on somebody else's IP and things of that nature?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, we obviously. You know, creating value in a startup, you know, one of the key things is to, you know, come up with an IP strategy. And there is, of course, many ways to do that. But certainly, starting from the formation point and the contribution agreements related to the formation, to bringing employees, bringing consultants, we certainly make sure that all the questions are answered about, you know, IP chain and IP ownership. Because certainly in past lives, I've been on the other side, working for larger corporations, buying small companies. And you know, that's what I looked for during due diligence. Were there consultants that didn't have strong agreements who may have some type of ownership claim in the IP? We also work in strong partnership with Schwegman Lundberg. On the patent front, Brad Forrest has been a strong supporter of our firm and, more importantly, I think, of the tech community, you know, the startup tech community here in town. And, patents, we could debate all day about their validity and worth as in regards to software in general or mobile apps, but we're still strong believers in at least exploring the possibility of obtaining some type of patent protection. And so we take a very broad view of that and, have our checklist and have, there's no doubt that, the stronger the IP claim you make, I think that helps on the valuation down the road. It's become an interesting subject certainly the last couple of years during the mobile revolution, where there have been, of course, just a explosion of good ideas, but some of them just are ideas that can't really be protected by traditional IP. So that's why you have, again, that's in my mind, of course, that's sometimes good because you've got literally hundreds of companies going off, building innovative things that are building other people's work. So a lot of that's going on. But again, just because you've come up with an idea that you're going to, do mobile distribution of coupons doesn't mean that that's protectable, and it's not going to be thousands of people doing it.
As we're seeing with Groupon copycats.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Say, you mentioned the word valuation, John. Could you talk a little bit about your relationships with or your how you work with the venture community and what you bring to the party for your clients in that regard?
Well, sure. You know, we Well, we just, you know, again, this is what we do. So I think we've got a pretty good, you know, database of how to help people at least approach the valuation, you know, methodology. And again, obviously no precise science. You know, the precise science of doing some kind of multiple of earnings was certainly blown away probably, you know, 96, 97. And there's many ways to look at it now. Again, there, you know, there's people who base valuation on some type of revenue stream, some type of users. Again, it's all over the board. But we watch the we watch the ecosystem pretty closely. We watch what's going on in California too. Luckily, there's a couple of good websites run by law firms out there where they actually do quarterly reports. Oh, showing you know, here's what the valuation looks like for companies getting their first round of angel money, and so we get a pretty good feel for that. But of course, ultimately, it's about the market and you know, investors are willing to pay, and it's just that's such a it's clearly a multivariable equation that takes some thought. Yeah. And I wish it was all I wish there was any science to it, but especially at the micro level where, okay, you're beyond the idea stage. You've launched an app and you have a user, but still, you know, trying to come up with any kind of semblance of a predictable revenue stream or some type of predictable cash flow model where some investment banker can build a discounted cash flow model off it. You know, it doesn't work. And as I think we've seen over the last year, if you look at, you know, the Valley and what kind of deals they're funding, you know, there's a lot of crazy money gets funded out there. You know, it's, and again, there's certain variables or certain verticals, I should say. Gosh, mobile ad platforms that manage, distribute, let people create mobile ads. You know, how much money has been poured in there the last 18 months? You know, yeah. 15, 20 companies got funded, you know, $5-10 million a piece. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's and that's part of the fun of it, though, too. And so, again, we've got some pretty good ideas on that we share with our clients, and we help them at least, you know, build a defensible position that, yes, this idea truly is worth, you know, $2 million at this stage, for example.
Are there spaces that you focus in? So are you doing it all? I mean, are you doing med tech and internet and web technology, mobile?
Sure. Yeah, we're pretty focused. No, we really do not do, of course, the hottest area in town, which is, you know, medical devices. We kind of a specialty area. I think we decided 5 years ago that we were not going to plow that. Again, it's the best space in town as far as creating economic value over the last 20 years. So we do just a tremendous variety. We've got traditional software developers. We've actually got a few hardware companies. Hardware is making a nice little comeback in this town. A lot of cool stuff going on there. And, you know, by the force of nature over the last year, we do more and more, work with more and more companies that are doing mobile apps. No question about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Give us some highlights, John. What's out there that you're really excited about?
Oh, well, again,
all of his clients.
All of his clients, yes. Very exciting.
You know, it's, you know, again, I'm very excited about, you know, the revolution I see happening, you know, in the mobile space. What was it today? Some report came out this morning or late yesterday. You know, 44 billion mobile app downloads by 2016. You know, I think we're seeing a number of tipping points, you know, take place.
That's a lot of fart apps, John. That's a lot of fart apps.
It is, man. A lot of and flashlights and things like that. You know, the revolution is just, you know, what are we in? We're probably, you know, in year two of the, you know, post-PC and possibly a post-web revolution. So why, you know, why wouldn't anyone want to participate in this kind of fun stuff? And we've already seen it happen. Look at the value that's been created in some of the mobile pioneers. But anybody thinks it's done, you know, they're wrong. You know, what percentage of the, you know, the business world, the corporate world, has really taken on mobile and figured out, you know, what does mobile mean to me? Again, you've got the classic, let's take existing media, try to cram that into some other kind of space. You got web companies who have tried to repurpose their web strategies or web content for mobile. And of course, you know, had some varying success on that. So, you know, mobile's going to be a whole different way of thinking about computing, I think, marketing distribution. So it should be, gosh, I can't believe it's just not going to be incredibly interesting, you know, over the, you know, over the course of the next 5 years. And, you know, we do work with some really cool companies. We've been working with Do Apps down in Rochester for a long time. They've got some, you know, two or three, you know, again, their problem is that they're so good on idea creation that, you know, it's just amazing. They've got a great business, a little platform for creating mobile content and a mobile presence for newspapers, radio stations, TV stations. I don't know, I think they've got 200 different apps for that. They've got a joint venture with Mayo, where they've been slowly but surely developing and getting apps that are leveraged off of some of Mayo's great content. So it's just, again, in Minneapolis, there's just a lot of good stuff going on. I don't know if any of you were at the Justin Grammon's mobile conference.
Yeah, Phil was one of the three partners that... Yeah,
I thought that was a very vibrant, and the demonstrations were good. It was just a ton of stuff happening in this town in that space.
Yeah, it was a great event, and we're looking forward to even a better one next year. But thanks very much for coming to that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you know, and again, I think that brings up a good point too. Is that, oh, you know, it's funny. Lately, I've heard little bit of this kind of thought, or kind of it comes up about every 2 or 3 years in Minneapolis, when this is a town that's impossible to do tech in, and it's hard to raise money. But I don't know, when I objectively look at what's just happened, you know, in this first part of the year here, you know, it's very, very positive. You know, you've got, again, I was just thinking like four deals off the top of my head. You got Chris Heim, of course, you know, one of the startup superstars in this town.
Yep.
You know, again, a guy that almost no one knows. The Amcom deal, man, $160 million, just incredible. You know, just incredible deal for this town, for the ecosystem, certainly for the ecosystem for smaller companies. And then, of course, look at yesterday, Vital Images. Mm-hmm. How many people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, even knew who Vital Images is?
Right.
You know, four times revenue, $273 million from Toshiba. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, on the more on the startup side, you know, Eighth Bridge, what a fantastic home run for this city, $15 million in two rounds. You know, Jamie and that team over there have done just an incredible job. And I'm going to give Mike Gorman public credit for, you know, being brave. And, you know, again, sometimes the venture guys in this town and some of the angels get slammed a little bit for not being brave and not investing, you know, in Minneapolis. Hey, that's a brave investment for Mike Gorman and his team. And so I take my hats off to those guys.
Yeah,
and
he kind of small. I was going to say, he kind of shut everybody up on that one, didn't he?
Yeah, he put a ton of money in that. And more importantly, of course, is you know, help them make the inroads into the other people with money. And then, on, you know, again, if you could start going small yet, one of our clients, a company called Zencoder, of course, announced
that's right.
After 3 weeks.
John Dahl.
They've done a nice $2 million round. Mm-hmm. You know, on top of the angel round that they did as part of their, you know, Y Combinator process some time ago. So, you know, people tell me, oh, we can't do it here. And, you know, here's four examples of you know, companies that, again, you can do it here. There is money here. But as my partner reminds me, you know, about every 3 or 4 months, and again, we both have spent our career not only, you know, being lawyers for startups, but having been actual employees of startups they had to raise money. And it is never easy to raise money. And that's just, you know, that's just all there is to it. Even if you're in Silicon Valley, it is not easy to raise money. You think again? You go to the websites and see. Oh my gosh, three more deals close, $5 million apiece. But you know, how many companies in the Valley are out there scrapping though? There's tons. And so raising money, when you've got to get a stranger to write you out a big check, you know, based on maybe two or three initial meetings and maybe a couple good referrals or references, it's a tough deal. And you got to really hustle. And I don't think that's changed. Sometimes it's a little easier than others. Late 90s, it got maybe a little out of control. But it wasn't even easy then. And it's not easy now. But, I suppose it just doesn't surprise me. Every month, we're doing a couple angel deals. I think since we've got a ton of what I would call micro startups, 2 to 5 people out there trying to get their dream. If you want to raise that 150 to 250, even in this town, you can do it. And the good news, of course, I think in this town also is that, my gosh, what's the Dow up since June? 35, 40, whatever the percentage is. I think the people, the brave souls, and there are brave souls out there, who can write out a $50,000 check. I think feel a little more confident about their money since the market has responded so well. And there's no question they're investing. There's a great society of angel investors out there that have invested over the last 20 years. And good thing too is there's a new generation of angel people popping up now. I'm sure you guys have talked to the Weber brothers up in St. Cloud.
They are
the future, and they are investing. And something. And again, another rap that sometimes I think Minnesota investors get sort of hit with is that for $50,000 they want to do 200 hours of due diligence. I tell you, talking with the Webbers, talking with some of the other angels in town here, they're doing it in their old-fashioned way. They meet people, they do a gut and understand that 6 months is a lifetime in this industry, so you can't sit there and ponder it that long. So sometimes you just have to make a gamble.
Yep.
That's what it's all about.
Well, it's good. I was going to say, John, it's good to kind of wrap up on a positive there. I wanted you to talk about how you see the current state, and I think those are all good thoughts. But I suppose we should move along and let you get back to your busy day. I also want to do a shout out for you for being a longtime sponsor of the mini bar, mini demo events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, I think some of you guys were up in St. Cloud, and you can see the vibrancy is really spread. And you know that the vibrancy is down in Rochester as well. I'm positive you'd find it in Fargo and Duluth. So, the basics are out there for this state to continue to participate and lead. And also, the last thing I'll even say is that I'm feeling good things from the University of Minnesota. I had been possibly a minor public critic of the university. Mm-hmm. So they kind of fixed me. I was asked to serve on the advisory board at the engineering school. So I've been doing that now. And I'm here to tell you, the news is that they have people over there doing incredible research, incredible work with industry. But guess what? Nobody knows about it.
That's the problem. They got to reach out more, or get some communicators working for them.
One of the NetPerceptions founders, Dr. Joe Constant, he's doing this incredible research on the efficacy of crowdsourced solutions and all that, and it's just fascinating stuff.
Wow.
And so will there be businesses that spring out of there? Yeah, let's hope so. And of course, I think we all know, the U participated in that recent commercialization and licensing seminar conference. So I see good things happening over there. And again, I think that it's part of the vital
partnership between, you know, the schools, the state, industry, and, you know, things are happening to get that. And yep. I think there's a lot of other participants. St. Thomas is, you know, I think is doing a good job too of trying to make that connection. So, yeah, you know, certainly, you know, I think we've overcome the, you know, general malaise of 2 years ago, and I just don't, you know, I don't. No one's walking in my office saying I'm throwing in the towel because things are tough.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the opposite. Well, I just want to just throw one more thing in before we go on. I know we got to wrap up, but you know, you mentioned the U of M and in the MIS Research Center, there's a mobile technology session coming up here and on May 6th. And that's exactly the sort of thing that I really want to see the U do, which is use their brain trust to educate businesses that have checkbooks in this market, educate people that potentially aren't even aware of where the on-ramps are and how big the opportunity is. And let's show them, let's point the way. And the U can do that. Let's get the cultural anthropologists in, let's get the computer scientists in and help educate the market, if you will.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you know, part of the engineering school is they've got this crazy series of lectures they've been going on now for a couple of years, and the speakers are outstanding. Now, again, unless you're a geek like me, you're not finding out about that. But about a month ago, Dr. David Clark from MIT came by and made this very cool speech about how maybe cultural anthropology, sociology, and the liberal arts are really going to be the driving forces for the new technology.
I love that meme. I love that meme. Hey, well, we're going to have to start promoting more of those events at the U, or just becoming aware of them and spreading the word, because I love the U.
Oh, gosh, 2, 3, 4 truly world-class speakers, you know, for the last year. I can't remember the prof's name from the Max Planck Institute of Physics in Berlin, who spoke last year, who's basically devoted the last 10 years to search. And he gave his kind of view of where search is going in the future. And so you think the revolution, you know, again, if anyone thinks the revolution on search is over, they're wrong. And search is going to, you know, is going to change. It's going to, you know, again, all of this is. And, you know, where are we in the revolution? Maybe we're 10 years into it, but I think it's a 20, 30-year revolution.
Well, we're on the front edge of it, too. So, listen, John, thanks very much. John Roberts from New Council.
I'm sure I'll see all you guys. I suppose, let's see, next weekend it's...
mini demo.
Mini bar.
Mini bar. Sorry, that's mini bar.
I'll
see you then.
See you guys then. Yeah.
Thanks for everything,
thanks, John.
Really appreciate what you're doing for the community, man. Take care.
Bye. See you.
Great guy. Lots of stuff going on.
Man.
He was one of our inaugural sponsors for Mobile 3D this year. So,
really?
John very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So. I knew he was a sponsor. I didn't know he was an inaugural sponsor.
Yes, with, you know, the first Mobile 3D. And, you know, we could count on John for being there and the folks at New Council. So, it was wonderful. So, but it's nice to hear good news and hear good things happening.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we should probably wrap, but, let's just briefly talk about Minnesota Cup. I don't know if you guys have been out to the site lately, but when you look at the review board, when you look at the participants and the categories they're in, I get more and more impressed each time this is pulled together. Really, just an outstanding event.
Yeah, it really is. I guess the deadline to enter is May the 20th. And I don't know, last year, I think there were 1,200 entries. It would be interesting to see how many they get this year. But it's definitely gets a lot of play here in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think it's gone away from its, you know, a lot of people complain, well, isn't it about just ideas? And it really has gone beyond that. I mean, I think the ones that tend to get selected as semi-finalists and finalists are obviously the ones that are further along and that have real business plans and real teams pulled together. So it gets a little more, sort of sophisticated and more difficult to be selected each year, but that's a good thing, I guess, that the quality goes up. And
yep,
And the sponsors keep coming in and making the prizes bigger, and that's all a good thing.
Yep. Yep.
So what do we got coming up in the next week, guys? We got some good stuff shaking. Mima doing another Cat Foa event on Monday.
I should go to that. They sound fun.
Yeah, I'm thinking of going to that one, too.
Yep.
The guy sounds like an interesting speaker.
And well, you said again on May 6th, we've got the U of M mobile technology seminar.
Yep.
So what's that all about?
Well, it's about adoption, design, and sustainability lessons. And these events are typically pretty doggone high end, but they're really good. I mean, if you want to learn, it's just, it's academic related, but you can learn a lot about sort of the cutting edge and where things are at. So.
And that happens on the 6th.
Yep.
And again, we got we've got Mini Bar on the 7th, and our very own Steve Borsch will be doing a little presentation there.
And Tim Elliott.
Oh, hey, you guys are doing it together.
We're doing it good together. Deal. Yeah.
Well, there you go. And that is, called.
I'll be scared otherwise.
That's called, what's the topic?
Bulletproof WordPress.
For those of you that shoot your computer on a regular day.
No.
Or your website.
Website. No, but it's there is a sort of a state of the art of hardening it, making it secure, and making it perform. And
gotcha.
So.
And then an event you can't go to in a couple of weeks, the iOS.
Because it's sold out.
I know.
Well, you got a seating for 25. That's pretty much not going to be tough to sell out at the Apple store.
Right.
So I think this Apple thing is going to be big. So we'll see.
So as we record this, there's only 136 more free tickets for Mini Bar left.
Nah.
Oh, really?
So if you want to go to Mini Bar for free, you better, get your tickets now.
Well, and they have 1,000 slots, so that's amazing.
Yeah, they're going to probably open up those paid that are, I think, are 15 or 20 bucks each, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you straggle, you have to pay.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
All right. Well, guys, don't be too sad. It's going to be 70 degrees today.
It's going to be a beautiful day. So.
Yeah. I already have my shorts on, but I have to change. I have a meeting today. So anyway.
Wear your Bermudas. Wear your Bermudas.
That's right. Shorts.
Yeah. That's right. All right, guys.
Thanks very much. We'll see you next week on the Bit of Eight Gang podcast.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.